You're listening to the Let's Talk Future podcast series presented by Oppenheimer. If you're interested in the economy, the markets, and investing in general, you've come to the right place. This series was created to fascinate and enlighten every type of investor. Curious about the latest consumer trends? How about innovations in healthcare or technology? The Let's Talk Future series definitely has you covered. Through timely and relevant conversations, we deliver some of the best thought leadership in the financial services industry. Our renowned hosts and guests explore big questions and big ideas and leave you with actionable insights. In this episode, our guests are Brian Werdesheim, Managing Director at Oppenheimer and a founding member of the Summa Group, and Leah Bernthal, Organizational Strategist, Social Entrepreneur, and Founder of Every Purpose. And our host is Jane Ross, Managing Director and Editor-in-Chief of the Let's Talk Future podcast series. This episode was recorded on April 4, 2024. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Let's Talk Future. Here, we're going to talk about taking philanthropy into the 21st century. Listeners of this podcast know that we like to tackle disruptive forces that can create change in our economy and in society at large. Certainly, philanthropy is one of those forces. Historically, philanthropy has played a big role in financing higher education, the arts, and healthcare. But today, there are some big changes afoot brought about by new players, new younger players, that want to see their money put to work in direct and impactful ways. So we're going to talk about the implications of all of that, and we have the perfect two guests to do so. Leah Bernthal is an organizational strategist and social entrepreneur who, through her social impact consultancy, Every Purpose, partners with individuals, families, and businesses to align their values and goals in investments, philanthropy, and community engagement. Brian Werdesheim is a managing director at Oppenheimer and a founding member of the Summa Group, where he serves a large, diverse group of clients ranging from C-suite executives, company founders, private business owners, and others on the issues of their investments and long-term goals. And philanthropy certainly plays a role there. I also want to note that Brian is a top 100 USA Forbes Shook advisor, which is impressive. So welcome, Leah. Welcome, Brian. And Leah, I'd like to start off with you and ask you to give us a sense of philanthropy in the U.S. today.
Yes, thank you, Jane. It's such a pleasure to be here. Philanthropy today is still dominated by traditional foundations. End of 2023, assets were somewhere upwards of $1.4 trillion in the U.S. alone. And this still is the predominant way that grants are made to nonprofit organizations and philanthropy works. However, there have been a lot of new players on the scene. Not only have donor advised funds rapidly grown over the past 20 years, in fact, according to the National Philanthropic Trust, it's the fastest growing vehicle in philanthropy, hands down. At this point in time, donor advised funds, which are also called DAFs, have assets of close to $230 billion. And it's been a really rapid and interesting growth in that space. There are a few really interesting pieces about differences between private foundations and donor advised funds, not only in the timing of how the capital comes in, that there is no required payout, but that also the donors get all of their tax deduction in for the amount that is contributed in the given in that given year. But there's also a lot of flexibility with what you can do with these funds. And that is really what's been attracting the range of donors and families into donor advised funds. This has also been a traditional giving vehicle for community foundations, which are very regionally focused. But since 1991, when Fidelity Charitable was the first to really bring it under management, the banks and financial institutions have been the biggest players in donor advised funds. And right now, Fidelity, Schwab, and Vanguard Charitable are the three largest donor advised funds in the entire country.
Yeah. And I want to ask, so can you give us a little bit more detail how that works?
Donor advised funds are extremely easy to set up. It takes the pressure of all of the legal and tax and upfront costs of setting up a family foundation and managing it and overseeing grants by using a fiscal sponsor. A fiscal sponsor in these financial institutions would be Fidelity Charitable. That is a 501c3. So they actually act as a fiscal philanthropic sponsor. When you have a liquidity event, whether that's from your company, an inheritance, or even just a moment where your family is ready to start putting capital into philanthropic causes, you can set it up very easily with either a community foundation or one of the financial institutions. You can literally set it up in a day. And especially when you are having a liquidity event, you get the full tax deduction in that given year. So it's also become a very effective tax vehicle for people that are experiencing those moments in their lives. Once those funds are in, the other part that separates it from a traditional foundation is that there is actually no required payout. Traditional foundations have a minimum of 5% of assets that need to be granted in any given year, whereas donor advised funds, you can do way more than that, as well as just wait until you're ready to give. So those funds have been growing exponentially because people have put in tremendous amounts of money, but not necessarily paid out to nonprofits and to other entities, the 5% that foundations are required. The other part about donor advised funds that are really interesting and have started to gain a lot of popularity is that you can use these funds for philanthropic investments. What I mean by that is you can invest in venture funds that are focused on circular economy, on the climate, on affordable housing, invest them in different public-private partnerships that are going for equitable investment in communities. And you can invest in venture funds that are really at the early stage VC level, that where you have opportunities to help startups focused on energy, infrastructure, climate, food, agriculture, things that are really aligned with your values, but are 100% for-profit and ROI driven. So the funds in your donor advised fund can be used for a wide range of philanthropic initiatives.
Right. So much more efficient, much more direct. So Brian, that takes me over to you because you're involved in those kinds of conversations, certainly with your clients, those who just monetized an asset or has a life change. So I'd be interested in your perspective of how do you speak with those different clients and advise them versus a DAF family foundation and what those conversations are like.
Well, first of all, Leah did a great job in terms of comparing and contrasting some of the distinguishing features that exist within a DAF, a donor advised fund, and a family foundation. So look, my job is to educate. And so when I'm speaking with a client, a family who is trying to figure out what they are trying to accomplish as far as their philanthropic objectives, what I try to do with them is just explain the pros and the cons of both sides. And they're both great, but they both serve very different purposes. As Leah said earlier, the beautiful thing about a DAF is that it's just so easy, it's cost-effective, it's not expensive. And the reality is a lot of families are very intimidated with philanthropy. They, you know, the idea of setting up a family foundation could be daunting. And like Leah said, you know, there's requirements, it's expensive, there's reporting issues, and, you know, it kind of goes on and on and on. And so I think it could actually be a inhibitor to actually doing good, just because the idea of setting up a foundation can be overwhelming. A DAF, again, you get the immediate tax benefit, which is great. So if I'm dealing with a family, Jane, that is really most interested in empowering the next generation with structure and responsibility and roles, kind of teaching them philanthropy in a more formal way, then the family foundation can be a really, really great thing. And I've seen it work. And I know Leah has too, in a lot of powerful ways. But if that is not the goal, and you know, I have conversations every day with families on this level. If the goal is to look, we want to really just get money to some amazing causes where there's values alignment in the most efficient, cost-effective way, then I always recommend the DAF.
Interesting. And I'm glad that you framed it that way, Brian, because that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about was that, you know, in my intro, I talked about changing values. And certainly as we're seeing this major generational transfer of wealth from boomers to their heirs, we're seeing a lot, some different priorities in how the next generation wants to see their money put to work. So, Leah, can you talk a little bit about that, like how you see the landscape changing and different ways of accomplishing that?
Definitely. Oh, with the over $50 trillion that is going to be flowing down from the baby boomer generation, there's so much opportunity for this capital to be put to good use, to really impart change and to really have a positive effect on not only our local communities, our national issues, as well as global. The real conversations that seem to be happening are how people want to have relationships with the organizations and the businesses that they're investing this capital in. The more traditional way of philanthropy has been very hands-off. There's been a lot of, I guess I would call it, separation of church and state from the funders to the nonprofit organizations or the different groups that they want to be involved in. And that's really been a big shift. People want more transparency. They want to be able to see the impact of their time and their money in real time. They want data. And they really also want to be able to understand how they're moving their issues forward in a tactical as well as strategic way. And so as these generations start to talk about the issues that are important to them, not only are there differences in values, traditionally religion and education are the top two, hands down, where most of the money in the United States goes. But conversations are growing around climate, women and girls, equity, social justice, issues that had traditionally really been left possibly to the public sector or really to more mainstream nonprofits. Families are really wanting to get involved in that. And so conversations around how do you start to look at different ways to align not just your charitable giving and your philanthropy, but also your investing are a lot more common. Wanting to look at impact investing, social enterprises that they can put their early stage investments in, as well as nonprofits and philanthropies. And so really looking at a much more holistic approach to this capital. And the part that's been really amazing is now that impact investing and some of these metrics have over 10 years of data, the ROI on them is proving to be just as effective as traditional companies that aren't looking at all the different metrics of people and planet and communities and some of those other aspects. So there's a lot more opportunities to invest capital that shows just as many returns as there is to give philanthropic dollars out to nonprofits.
Well, and I love characterizing ROI in that broader sense because that's pretty meaningful. And staying on that, as a result of that kind of thinking, we're seeing a lot of new partnerships and collaborations as ways to tackle some of these issues, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's not only are there so many venture funds and investment opportunities, but an example actually that I just saw come across my newswire today, there's an amazing public-private partnership in the Bay Area where I'm based called Partnership for the Bay's Future. And this was launched 5 years ago. Today, they were announcing their five-year anniversary and their goals. But primary investors in this are Chan Zuckerberg Initiative and a lot of other philanthropy, San Francisco Foundation. They've put in millions and millions. And this is really looking at how do we build affordable housing? How can we keep people in their homes, working side by side with nonprofits, local community leaders, policymakers, and philanthropists to try to drive change? And so they're seeing the investments that they've put into this public-private partnership have just been so successful. Thousands and thousands of people are being able to stay in their homes, and they're really seeing new policies being driven by this opportunity to take their philanthropic capital and invest it into public and private partnerships in a community.
Yeah. And, you know, that whole move from the traditional way to donate to some of the newer demands of trust-based or no strings, you know, we all know Mackenzie Scott and what she's tried to do. We're seeing that in the marketplace as well.
And in the evolution of philanthropy at this moment. This idea of trust-based philanthropy has become very popular. Kinsey Scott has given over $17 billion to over 2,000 organizations. And really, her approach is very different. They don't apply for grants. They don't go through all this red tape and bureaucratic process. And she looks at the six really basic practices of trust-based philanthropy that have started to really take off. Giving multi-year unrestricted funds, that the funder actually does their research and homework and starts to reach out for information. We all know that nonprofits have very, very limited resources. And so to be able to do a little bit of the homework to make sure that even the opportunity is in the right alignment. What I mentioned earlier, transparency is key, understanding what's under the hood, having open, honest conversations between funders and nonprofit leaders about the work, and then really listening and getting feedback, not just from organizations, but listening to people in the community about what's really needed to drive change. And so some of this responsive and adaptive giving is transforming the way people are thinking about philanthropy, as well as giving nonprofits the opportunity to really have longer runways, build teams, and have multi-year strategies, as opposed to having every year to start over and raise funds and start from zero.
Yeah, that's good.
I just want to add something, if that's okay, Jane, before you go.
Yes, please.
Leah brings up a really important point. And, you know, I know one of the biggest challenges, it has to do with the sustainability of some of these well-intentioned organizations, right? So Leah's clients are writing big checks to make a huge impact. And while they may not have a pure profit motive, what they really care about is that that organization has the ability to sustain itself over long periods of time. Because if they don't, even the most well-intentioned capital and the well-intentioned people will not be able to keep that organization going long enough to see the benefits of all that work. So I just wanted to make that important point, because I've seen it firsthand where, gosh, this is a great product, this is a great business, but for whatever reason, they run out of money and they just can't see this thing to the finish line.
Yeah. And Brian, I'm glad you brought up that point. And I was going to ask you, you know, some of the conversations that Leah was talking about with those goals and values and how to put the money to work. That's where you come in. You're dealing with a lot of these players, investors, people that want to put their money to work. So, you know, how do you help motivate your clients think more broadly, more strategically, getting these themes into the conversations with your account base?
I'm so happy that you asked that question, because I definitely have a unique approach. And, you know, I have some very strong feelings about philanthropy. And I feel strongly that it's incumbent upon people who have had success, who have, you know, benefited from someone else in their life that has allowed them to achieve, you know, great things and maybe substantial multi-generational wealth. And I love Melinda French Gates, you know, who I just admire so much in terms of how she's approaching philanthropy. And one thing that she said that really resonated with me, and I say this to clients all the time, and what she really said is, look, until you give back, you really haven't done anything at all. And I think it's true, you know, because look, people are busy, people are preoccupied with a lot of things. Social media hasn't made it any easier. And so I, when I talk to families and I talk to kids, I just say, look, get your head out of your phone, pay attention, be aware of your surroundings. And if you do that, you'd be surprised at how much impact you can have in very mysterious and sometimes very unsuspecting ways. So Jane, really, my conversations really are along the lines of that. I'm not really trying to guilt my clients into philanthropy, but I'm really trying to educate them, and I'm trying to make them look at it from the standpoint of, look, you've benefited greatly and it's now time for you to give back. And like I said earlier, some of them are well-intentioned, but a lot of them just think it's a daunting task. And so with people like Leah, who has the experience and the ability to sit down with a family and talk to them about impact investing and talk to them about all the innovative things that are happening right now, there's never been a greater time for people to give. So it's really exciting.
It sure is. And I love having the two of you talk about that. But Lee, I was going to ask you, given what Brian just said, what are your thoughts looking ahead over the next couple of years? We have a lot of events out there. You know, it's a politically polarized time. There's a lot of issues that are causing great anxiety. You know, the two of you are trying to do some good in all of that.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things I would say. One is part of what Brian speaks to about being overwhelmed about with philanthropy and not knowing what to do or not giving. Really, the most important piece is just to sit and think about the things that you care about in the world enough to give your time and money to and start from there and start small, focus on less than more. I think there's been a real pattern historically of giving a little bit to a lot of things. And, you know, when you sit down with your family or your children to think about if there were one or two things that we wanted to leave a legacy for and start to measure that and really look at multi-year impact, what would those things be? And the another piece is that nonprofits, while there's over 1.9 million in the United States, most of which are very, very small, the myth that nonprofits are overwhelmingly inefficient, they can't operate, they aren't, you know, a great investment, has really started to shift. The level of technology, data, AI, all of the things that have come into the nonprofit sector very late to the game. It's 20 years behind most other industries, but it's really starting to take hold now. And nonprofit leaders and boards are overwhelmingly requiring a much more technologically savvy teams and operations. And so the myth that, you know, I only give to programs, I don't give to overhead, really looking under the hood at organizations, because in order to be efficient and effective and function in the world today, we have to be able to invest in nonprofits, having technology, data, and resources to keep up with everything else. So there's so many different ways that families can plug into that, but really starting with what's in your heart and where your values lie and just starting small and building from there. And if it continues to grow, you can always expand into other issue areas. And I think in terms of the times we're in today, again, look around you. Do you want to have impact locally, nationally, globally? What are the issues that resonate with where you got today? Maybe your business, maybe your where your family came from. Those are some of the exercises that we sit down and talk through. And then also looking at, you know, in 5 or 10 years, what does that future state look like? What would you love to look back at a portfolio and say, oh my gosh, look at what we did. Look at where we really had impact. And again, for some families, that literally might be on their corner. And for others, it might be on a national or global stage. And so it's really your appetite and your interest and your values. And then, as we talked about earlier, the opportunity to then double, triple, or exponentially scale your impact by also investing in those in businesses and in for-profit entities that are working towards those same goals. So starting to align your portfolio with your philanthropic capital can exponentially impact the things you care about.
Well, hear, hear. And Brian, Leah, this is such a wonderful conversation to have. I think the work that both of you are doing in helping motivate investors and donors is so important and so meaningful. So I really appreciate walking us through the big issues today. Thank you.
Great to be with everybody. Thanks so much, Jane.
Thank you, Jane. Such a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Future. We know your podcast listening options are endless, and so we're glad you're spending time with us. Don't miss out on our next episode, and remember to subscribe today. Join our community to expand your thoughts on business, the markets, and the dynamic forces affecting them. It's time to talk future.